It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
All right, welcome back for another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Willard.
And Jeffrey has a surprise in store for us today. Knowing how big fans we are of B5, he says, I have a guest for you, but I'm not going to tell you who it is until you call.
If there's ever any doubt that Jeffrey played Kosh, I think this little bit of mystery and cryptic approach to our guest is proof in the pudding.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're having fun with it. I think this is the way to do it, is, especially with the possibility that people may have to change their schedules from time to time. And, if we say next week we're going to have so-and-so and then something unfortunately gets in the way that prevents that, I didn't want to. So, you know what? We'll just keep everybody on their toes, forcing them to come back each week and find out who this week's guest is going to be.
That, and I think you just want to torture us.
Oh, yeah, that's the good part.
I guess that's a plan, then.
Well, let's go ahead and roll.
Wait, let me ask you this. You want to guess? You want to try to guess this week?
No.
Actually, I do. I'm curious. My curiosity. Is it a regular that we saw throughout the entire series?
No. I'm not going to play 20 questions with you. Summer, you get one guess. Who it is. Tim, you get one guess, and then we'll bring the guest in.
I'm going to say Bruce Boxleitner.
That's who I was going to say.
Let's make the call. Find out who it is.
Okay. We have our special mystery guest on the line now.
Summer Brooks is the producer, and Tim Callender is the host, and I would like you to meet our mystery guest for the week, Stephen First.
No way.
Mike Veer.
Hello, Stephen.
That's just how much of a mystery, is it? You just told him who I was.
Well, we didn't know until then.
We thought about doing the whole 20 questions thing, but let's get right to it, okay?
Okay.
Welcome, Stephen. Thank you. As we told you, this is a new venture for us. This is the Babylon Podcast, capitalizing on some of the popular technologies that are available to us so that we can get out to the masses without having to go through conventional broadcast systems. I know you're familiar with this. You've got an internet radio show, don't you?
Yeah, it's coming up, actually, starting in March.
What's the name of it?
It's called Kidney Talk. It's from the Reno Support Network. And it's kind of like a Siskel and Ebert version of talking about kidneys. It's a fun version, funny stories, anecdotes, helping solve problems of kidney patients. You know, 10% of the population has some kind of kidney problems.
Wow, okay, so that we're getting right into the serious stuff right away.
Yeah. We'll do some kidney jokes, too.
Okay.
Tell us one.
Oh, I don't know. I have to think of them, you know.
Okay. Well, tell us how you first got in touch or were contacted for the role of Veer.
It was just the regular Hollywood thing. Is my agent called and said there's a science fiction show, and they, this is the part. And so I went in and I didn't know they had already done the pilot. And the problem was some of the other actors, I guess, had. And I walked into the room and I saw some of the other actors, they had their hair up, in like this fan. And I was thinking, oh my God, they must know something I don't. So I didn't want them to have an advantage over me. So I, what I did was I went into the men's room and I got that soap dispenser, the thing you with your hands, and I got soap, and I started to try to mold my hair up into like a fan. And, of course, it didn't work, and then soap got in my eye, and my eye started tearing, and it was just a mess, and my hair was, like, lopsided and slimy, and then they called me in, and I looked ridiculous, so I really felt like I owed them an explanation. So I said, you know, I am so sorry, I didn't know the thing about the hair, and so I went into the bathroom, and I got the soap, and I put soap in my hair, and it got in my eye, and that's why my eye's watering. And they stopped and they said, "Oh my God, it's Veer." You know, and I didn't even have to read.
Wow. That just sounds like every other casting decision that I heard. You know, Jerry Doyle came in and says, "Who do you want to play? Who do you want me to play?" "Oh, that's Garibaldi." Right there. Oh my goodness. So tell us about how did you have any influence on how your character grew through the series, or were you just waiting for JMS to throw something at you?
Well, basically, not really. I didn't have much to say about it. I don't think many of the actors did. I think JMS took, very much, everything he wrote as the Bible, and nobody really wanted to question it because the writing was so excellent anyway, so.
But when you were actually directing episodes, did you get to say, "Well, can I do this here, this little part different?" Or was that verboten?
The other actors, could experiment a little bit, but it was really heavy-handed in the casting and everything. We'd have four or five actors for each part, and it's basically, I gave my opinion, but it's basically, if JMS wanted somebody in particular, then, his decision went out over mine.
Stephen, what was the biggest surprise for you in terms of Veer's character?
The biggest surprise is that that JMS let him actually grow and have this wonderful arc of becoming stronger. Where he knew he was strong all along, he just didn't know it. And I think the turning point was when he killed Cartagia, unbeknownst to him that it was going to happen. And he just felt like he had to save Londo from demise.
Hey, Stephen, I have a question, please. Did direct Babylon 5 episodes, and you have become quite the accomplished director of film and television, and you relayed a fun story for me today about the prospects of directing a comedy show. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yes. I went to, I was trying to get some episodic work on a network, and they said to my agent, they said, "My gosh, he's done all these big action movies and everything, but we don't really know if he could direct comedy or not." And it's basically where I came from, this comedy and National Lampoon and and things like that, and that's what I'm known for. And I think a lot of the studio executives are very short-sighted. And like, if you've directed sci-fi, that's all you can do is direct sci-fi. If you directed an action picture, all you can do is direct action pictures. So it's a little ridiculous.
Well, to that point, I remember when Babylon 5 first rolled out that first year, and there was comments about, "Oh my God, Flounder's on Babylon 5." Do you now find people saying, "Oh my God, Veer wants to direct a comedy"? Has that kind of come full circle?
Well, I think the characters that I play have hurt me because they've kind of been inept and bumbling and. And say, "We're not going to let him direct. He'll be bumbled through the whole thing." I guess that is my attribute to being such a good actor. I don't know. People actually believe I'm like that. So, but I think the more I direct and the more different things I can direct, it'll be better, and I can just show people. Yeah, I can. I just did this real kind of Fargo type comedy. Black comedy, dark comedy. So, I can direct anything, basically.
Okay, so can you tell us about a comedic outtake in Babylon 5 that never made it to the screen or the blooper reels?
A comedic outtake? Well, there's so many of them, because, you know, most of my scenes were with Peter Jurasik, who played Londo, and the problem with working with Peter, you know, and him being, you know, one of your very good friends, is we constantly would laugh, and there was a scene I remember where we had to sing a Centauri opera to each other, and I think we did like 18 takes before we could finally, before they could finally piece one together that could be coherent enough, you know.
Stephen, what are some of the fond highlights of Babylon 5 for you, and then what were some of the not so fond highlights of Babylon 5 for you?
Well, the fond highlights for me was the camaraderie and the ensemble of the cast. I mean, you had Peter Jurasik and Andreas Katsoulis, Bruce Boxleitner, you know, just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful actors. And, you know, I always said if somebody can show emotion and everything through 8 pounds of latex on their face, they really are a good actor. And that was Andreas Katsoulis. I had a scene with him one time in like an elevator shoot or something, and he cuts his hand, and he lets the blood from his hand drip down. And every time the blood drips down, he says the word dead, representing all the Narns that were being killed. And it was so incredibly powerful. Here I am, you know, doing a scene with a man that looks like a lizard. And it was so believable to me. And it was as if we were in Nazi Germany, and he was a Jew, and I was a Nazi, and he was, you know, saying, how can your people do this? And it was just an incredible moment for me. I'll never forget it.
That was a very powerful scene.
Yeah, and the other one was, what were some of the lowlights of the... well, basically, I really didn't have any. I just thoroughly enjoyed my 5 years on Babylon 5.
Stephen, who do you wish that you might have had more screen time with?
Probably some of the female Centauris. That would have been fun. You know, why shouldn't I have some of the fun? Is what I think. But no. Let's see, female. Let's see, more. You know, I didn't have a lot of screen time with Jerry Doyle, and I thought he was really good. You know, and of course Bruce is always real good.
I would have loved to have seen more of the bar scenes, the little get together. You had Veer, Lanier commiserating about how their bosses don't listen to them. They look at each other, same time next year, tomorrow. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. More of those interspersed throughout there, I think, would have been just fun.
Yes, yes. It was. Yeah, he was great too. He was really wonderful.
How much Stephen First is in Veer, and how much Veer is now in Stephen First?
I think there's a little bit of me in all the characters I play, even the, you know, the bad guys. I haven't played too many bad guys, but I think that's what makes the characters good. You know, if you can put a little bit of yourself in each one, you know. But I hope I'm not Flounder. I hope I'm not Veer. But just a little piece of me in every character, just a little piece.
If Veer had a spin-off series, what would that have been like?
Oh, if Veer had a spin-off series. Oh, he'd probably be Veer living with his in-laws. And it would kind of be something like Everybody Loves Raymond, but with aliens. Everybody Loves Veer.
Oh, man.
Stephen, I have another question, please. The... Babylon 5 is about to enjoy still another resurgence as it's going to be broadcast on broadband through AOL's Into TV broadband services. What does that mean to you? I mean, what do you think about the fact that this series is being broadcast yet again, has found a new medium to be a distributor?
What does it mean to me? I hope it means some kind of money, you know. I'd hate to see, you know, everybody else getting rich off of this, and except me. I don't know what it means, to tell you the truth. I I would hope that they would do some movies, some, you know, special movies or something. But I thought it was terrible that when they were going to do a theatrical movie that none of us really were included in the theatrical movie.
Were you ever contacted about that?
No, I was contacted just to say that I wasn't going to be in it.
Wow.
That's nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, I just think, you know, I just don't understand it, you know. It was such a great cast, and we made the show come alive, and then they were thinking, well, let's do a big screen version, but we're going to use completely different people. You know, I don't understand that, loyalty-wise or artistically.
Well, if the AOL resurgence combined with hopefully the wild popularity of this podcast takes off a little bit, do you think you would have time to go back out on the convention road again?
No, I always loved doing the conventions. You know, a lot of actors didn't like doing them, but they did them anyway for financial reasons. But I actually liked doing them. Not only did I get to travel, but I got to actually meet the fans one-on-one, and it was just, I just had a great time. I just loved it. So I hope so, and I would try to make time to do it, you know.
Good, good. Because I know you were one of the fan favorites, especially the way, you know, they just the cuddle bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, as you referred to earlier about Veer's arc, where he goes from this bumbling fool who doesn't realize he has the strength, and in the process of trying to save his friend from darkness, has to descend to that darkness as well. I think that takes Veer out of being just that cuddle bear and makes him a much more poignant character.
Yes, and also when he, you know, the thing when he, like, he had this scene with Morden, and he gave him the little wave.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, he's starting to show he had a backbone there, too, you know, where, I mean, I just think, I think he is a formidable, I bet you, I'd love to see a series, you know, you asked about the spin-off series. It'd be great as Veer as the Emperor.
Yes.
And to see that.
To be honest, that's what I thought the movie, the theatrical movie was going to be about, basically taking Centauri Prime back from out from under the Shadow's allies.
I don't know what the movie was going to be about. I never even read a script, actually.
Have you read the Legions of Fire trilogy by Peter David about the Drak infiltration of Centauri Prime and Veer leading the resistance against the Drak, and, of course, leading to the events where Londo is strangled by Jakar and Veer becomes Emperor? Have you read that?
No, I haven't, but I like the sounds of it, you know.
It's well worth reading, especially since you're Veer.
Yes, this is true. I'll be reading about myself. So funny.
Stephen, what was it like to direct Babylon 5?
It was incredibly wonderful because the actors were so giving, you know, and I just loved directing it. I love directing anyway, and I like directing sci-fi. It's a lot of fun, and I'm not a huge fan of green screen, but which is unfortunately what I'm doing a lot of now, you know, because I direct movies for the Sci-Fi Channel.
What can you tell me about the process that you went through to direct? I understand that the actors were 100% there for you, but what was the behind the scenes of ramping up for it? Did you find the process, the fast turnaround of your prep time acceptable and the staff there?
Oh, yeah. You kind of work with what you have, and I thought the people were really professional, and I was very, very much supported by the, you know, camera crew, the props, the sets. Everything was there when I needed it, and I didn't have to want for anything.
Which was your favorite episode to direct for B5?
Oh, wow. You know, I really don't have a favorite episode. I just love directing. I just love directing it. I love directing good actors, and I really couldn't say what a favorite episode was.
Did you have a favorite scene or like a scene of dialogue, a scene of action, something that really, really, when you read it, you're like, oh my goodness, I can't wait to direct this?
Well, you know, there was a sequence where the episode kind of mirrored the McCarthy era, and people were being singled out who turned in their other friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a cool episode for me. I really enjoyed that episode, and I tried to make that as mysterious and as kind of political as possible.
Steven, do you have anything that you want to plug at this point?
Do I have anything I want to plug? Well, I've been directing movies for the Sci-Fi Channel. I have a new one called Basilisk. If everybody knows what a basilisk is. And that'll be out probably sometime later this year. And I'm developing a TV series with National Lampoon, the comedy company. See, I can do comedy. And I'm producing a movie at New Line Cinema called My Sister's Keeper, from the best-selling novel by Jodi Picoult of the same title. And I'm producing a movie called Keeping Faith, also a Jodi Picoult novel, for Lifetime Television. That's what I'm doing.
And a kidney radio show.
Yes.
And a kidney radio show. If it's successful, we're going to move on to livers and then gallbladder.
Where can people listen to kidney talk, rather?
You know, I don't know. It's all news to me, but I think it's going to be over the Internet, and I think it's going to be broadcast through dialysis centers where people have to sit and have dialysis for 4 and 5 hours a day. We have a captive audience that can't go anywhere. It's going to be once a week, and it's a half hour once a week.
You're obviously very, very busy. We sure appreciate you giving us your time.
Oh, sure, anytime, and maybe I can come back when my movie's about to air and we can plug it.
We can definitely do that.
That would be great.
Alrighty, great.
Right.
Steven, thank you very much. It's been an honor to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, thank you.
All right, we'll be back after that awesome interview with a discussion about the overall tone of B5 and start digging into season one a little bit deeper.
I'm sorry. I wish there was something that I could do, but I tried telling them, but they wouldn't listen. I mean, they never listen. I'm sorry.
Dead. 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 How do you apologize to them?
I can't.
Then I cannot forgive.
All right. The theme, the tone, the overall story, that is Babylon 5. What's the best way to describe that without boring people to tears who've already known it and intriguing people who don't know that?
Well, let me say what I think it's not. When B5 first hit the airwaves, a lot of what I saw it described as in the TV guides and whatnot was a United Nations in space. And while there is sort of that element, you know, you've got the council chambers and the League of the Non-Aligned Worlds, and obviously the main council that's composed of the Narns and the Minbari, which resembles the Security Council. That really doesn't say what it is.
I'm not sure you did either.
Well, that's true. How would you encapsulate 5 years of everything that went on in Babylon 5? I mean, there's the arcs of, well, you almost have to, in a sense, take it apart. The easiest one for me is obviously Londo's character. I think Londo is that traditional Shakespearean tragedy of the man who is looking for something bigger than himself, makes bad decisions, and comes to a tragic end. But that's only one part of it.
And I think that's part of the problem with science fiction on television. Everybody wants that easy, quick blurb that you throw into the TV guide or you throw at a marketing person. And if you have a good story, there's no way you can sum that up as a tagline.
I will relay to you a story that JMS told me. I don't remember where I was when he told me that, but he had explained how he had been in a pitch meeting for Babylon 5 with network executives and had been forced into this exact situation, trying to describe the tangled web that he was trying to create. And he had said, oh, it's got some of this, and it's got some of that, and there's these characters that do this, but it's really about man and his time and his unfairness and his da, 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 da. And he named off all these things that he was trying to encapsulate, and they kind of looked at him like deers in a headlight, you know, and kind of spit. And then he just paused and he said, it's Casablanca in space. And the executives went, oh, cool, okay, great, we get that.
Okay.
That's almost like the scene where Shakar is trying to describe, he's asked, what is God and what is truth? And he goes through the long explanation, and all the Narns are looking at him, the same deer in the headlight, and he goes, God is a river and truth is the mouth of the river, and they're, oh, yeah. Maybe that's where that scene comes from.
I think
what you can say about Babylon 5 is some of what's been said before. It is truly a novel for television. It had a beginning, it had a middle, it had an end. Characters went through paths, they went through changes, they went through significant changes. Things were not the same at the end as they were at the beginning. And how all that unfolds over the course of 5 years is what makes it a powerful drama. And it is a drama as opposed to an action adventure, in that the characters do change and that you touch on themes such as loss and love and, you know, the attainment of greatness that humans can reach for and the tragic mistakes that we can make as well. How was that?
That was good.
I'm wondering where you guys are going to go in the next episode with this little diatribe of yours.
Well, at that point, you know, we can tease apart each individual season. You know, we look at season one. What was the theme for that? What was established? Year two, what was established? And where did the story go? Year three, four, and five. And while they all tell this, you know, relate to the same saga, I think each year also tells a particular story. I think that each year, while they're interrelated, obviously, and part of the greater whole, I think each one tells a different part of that story.
Mm-hmm. I've always looked at the five seasons. Each season is a separate, call it novel, and then the each novel makes up the series. Like you have your epic fantasy series today, you know, you've got 15 books. Babylon 5 could have been a 15, quote, book series. We could have had, you know, each movie is another book. Each of the sequels could have been another book. A prequel, had there ever been such a wild idea to do one, could have been another book. And that depth of story is, you know, one of the reasons I came to the show and I stayed.
So, Summer, if you had to pick one year where you think, not only story-wise, but in terms of the production, the acting, the kinds of scripts, which one would you pick out as the epitome of what Babylon 5 could be?
In terms of my, you know, just, oh my word, I don't believe they just did that. on a regular basis, seasons 3 and 4 pretty much sum that up. The season 3, you have this huge, huge, epic, you know, battle, you know, getting all these worlds together, fighting for, you know, their right to continue to exist as they know it. And then in season 4, you find out that nobody on Earth even knew what happened. It's like, we did all that for what? But we did this for you. You did what for us? And then you have this whole, literally, you have like, they take like 2 breaths, you know, they have like a minute to rest, and then they start trying to free Earth. You have this long epic, followed by another long epic, and that, I guess, bang, bang, bang storytelling where everything continually ramps up without letting up is, I think, was brilliant.
I think, for me, I would have to say it would be year 4 as well. And one of the things that I thought was amazing about that is the show up to that point seemed to be about the battle against the forces of darkness. The shadows had returned. The first ones were gone. All we had left was the Vorlons. Oh my God, how are we going to defeat this ultimate darkness? And we did. And while as a viewer, I kind of sat sometimes wondering, okay, where can he go with this? Similar to what you were just saying, all of a sudden, these stories sort of evolved out of the situation. It stopped seeming like it was scripted with an overall plan and became the natural natural extension of events that had happened before. And that, to me, what was really powerful was almost like seeing real events taking place.
I actually look at seasons 3 and 4 as mirrors, because you have season 3 being the fight against the external darkness, and then season 4 actually is about just, you know, defeating the darkness within, because you actually have to defeat the darkness within yourself before attempting to eradicate it from everything around you. That's what I saw in it.
I think you guys should be like therapists. You're really both good at this.
Well, how about you, Jeffrey? For you, even involved in the production, which do you think was the year that epitomized the best that Babylon 5 could be?
I think it was season 3. Season 3, I felt like we were hitting stride. We had been telling a consistent arc. We had been developing the story. It had built according to Joe's plan. And at the conclusion of season 3, we were told, if it wasn't, it was before we got season 4 picked up. At the end of season 3, beginning of 4, we were told, you're going to get one more season, but that's it. There will not be a 5th season. And so Joe had to try and wrap up the arc a whole season short. And for me, that always caused too many unanswered questions. There were too many threads to the story that weren't being tied up because Joe was forced to now take 3 years of storytelling and try to wrap it all into 22 episodes, because there clearly and succinctly, there was not going to be a 5th season, you know, and that was that sort of jarred the process. So for me, I felt it was a nice natural progression, built up appropriately all through 3rd season, and then 4th, just, you know, from my perspective, never quite answered all the questions I had.
What were some of those questions?
Well, we don't have enough time or beer to get into all of those right now. But
we can make a list, right, and go over them later?
We have several episodes we can discuss this, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Definitely.
So where does that leave seasons 1 and 5? We've been talking about 3 and 4 here. So where do those leave, I hate to call them bookends, but they almost are. Or are they?
I think you're absolutely right. I think they're almost prelude and prologue, you know. Is prologue at the end? Did I use the right word there?
No, it should be epilogue.
Yeah.
Epilogue, thank you. Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, that's not right. season one, its true purpose was really all exposition, you know, explaining who these people were, what their interaction was, how they came together, what this place was, what this story was going to be. It is a necessary introduction. And then five served the purpose of saying, okay, this really, really, really is the end, and so now I really, really, really do have to wrap this up, and this is what we're going to do. And in a clever manner, he also, you know, the icing on the cake is that he does, you know, there's that huge 20-year gap between the final, you know, whatever the... It's funny, I always know the episodes by number, so I call them episode 421 and 422. There's this 20-year gap between those two.
Right.
Or 521 and 522, that's what it was.
Yeah, but...
And it's so funny, because I really do, I still think of all, I don't know the names of any of these episodes, but I know them all by number.
What's scary is I could probably take the number, figure out the season, and give you the episode name. But, yeah, for me... Season one was all about making sure all 4 million dominoes were properly placed and then setting up the branches that would branch off to knock down a row of dominoes you didn't even see coming at the right time.
I would also say, though, in my opinion, I think season one is probably the least successful season. Part of that is the expository nature of it, but I think that if you look at the episodes, which tend to be standalone episodes, generally speaking, I don't think that they are particularly standout ones. Now, some of them are, I think, in terms of just the standalone episodes. Deathwalker is really good, but for the most part, they're fair to middling, and some of them are just out and out horrible. I think Infection is like one of the worst things anybody's ever done. And I think, you know, to be fair, I'm not speaking out of school. JMS is said as much. And whereas you come back to some of that standalone work again in season five, I think that the difference is you've got these established characters. You're still working with arcs, even though they're smaller. I'm thinking of the, you know, the telepath arc. With a colony with Byron, some of Garibaldi's personal situations and dealing with the beginning of the Drak infestation of Centauri Prime. But having said that, I think even though they're standalone episodes, you've got all the history behind already that's now established, as opposed to telling you that this is established. And I think there's a difference there.
Well, I don't think season one was as hit and miss as you said. The first half of season one was one of those, okay, all right, next. And I don't think it really, season one didn't really hit its stride and really make me care fully about what was going to happen next until Eyes. Eyes and everything after that, literally from, for Jeffrey's sake, 116 through 122.
Thank you.
All
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that entire run of episodes, one after the other, set something in motion that would have an effect in the coming years. Every single one of those episodes did that. And that's, you know, I didn't see it when I first watched those episodes when they first came around, but each of those episodes had resonance, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't wait for next season. And then to see echoes of what happened in those episodes come back in season two and three and four and five, I'm like, whoa, cool.
Well, I think in the future we're going to have to go episode by episode, or at least in some cases, and discuss this. Cause,
oh, definitely.
I'll have to respectfully agree to disagree with you on some of that.
Awesome. That makes better chat. I think.
I think you guys need to wear like a bib because your geek is just drooling all over the place.
Well, my plan, if you guys agree, is to actually get an in-depth theme discussion for season one and then dive right into a little bit of The Gathering and a little bit of Midnight on the Firing Line, because I want to dissect those. How well did they set things up? How well did they work, you know? And I want to get fan feedback. You know, did that episode work for you? Did it not work for you? Oh, we do have a voicemail to play, too. Did I tell you that? We got voicemail.
Oh, can we play that now?
Sure.
Hello, this is Walter from L.A. I just wanted to call to just say I'm really excited about this Babylon 5 podcast. I can't wait to hear where you guys go with it. I don't have suggestions right off the top of my head, but I will. Looking forward to it. Glad you guys are doing it. Thank you for doing it. I'm really looking forward to an analysis of the storylines, the threads that went throughout all the seasons, because the show is just absolutely amazing. So thank you, and I'll be listening. Bye.
That pretty much sums up the general tone of emails we've been getting as well, and some of the comments left on the blog.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really wonderful, the kind of excitement that we seem to have generated and the support that we're getting.
Yeah, I think
we're on the right track, and I think it's very cool that we know for sure we have at least one listener.
I think it's pretty amazing, because most of the general sentiment has been, wow, I can't believe that no one's done a Babylon 5 podcast yet, and oh my goodness, you guys are doing it, and you've got someone who was there when it's being made. This is going to be cool.
I'm excited to be involved. Ha ha.
Yeah, see what you got yourself into? You asked and you received.
That's exactly right.
What was the line? Be careful what you wish for. The universe just may give it to you.
There you go.
That's precisely it. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So, Summer, can you read off that number for people who want someone to leave voicemail like Walter did?
Yes. The email address, if you want to chat by email, is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. And our little cool K7 voicemail line is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
There you go. And we had one email asking about forums. That we're still under discussion for that, because we don't know how much more resources we can spread ourselves amongst. But if we do manage to get a bulletin board forum for the podcast going, you guys will be the second ones to know.
Exactly. But keep those cards and letters coming, folks.
Definitely, definitely. All right. That is our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Stephen First, who played a wonderful, wonderful Viracoto. And we will see you next time.